This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Hello, I'm Sarah Pascoe.
Hello, I'm Carriad Lloyd.
And we're weird about books.
We love to read.
We read too much.
We talk too much.
About the too much that we've read.
Which is why we've created
the Weirdos Book Club.
Join us!
A space for the lonely outsider to feel accepted and appreciated.
A place for the person who'd love to be in a real book club but doesn't like wine or nibbles.
Or being around other people.
Is that you? Join us.
Check out our Instagram at Sarah and Carriad's Weirdos Book Club for the upcoming books we're going to be discussing.
You can read along
and share your opinions.
Or just skulk around in your raincoat like the weirdo you are.
Thank you for reading with us. We like reading with you.
This week's book guest is Mrs. Caliban by Rachel Ingalls.
What's it about? It's about an unsatisfied housewife who falls in love with a big green fish man.
What qualifies it for the Weirdos Book Club?
Well, did you hear what we said about the big green fish man? In this episode, we discuss
grief,
trauma,
love,
friendship,
infidelity,
and avocados.
Trigger warning, in this episode, we also discuss pregnancy loss, child loss, car accidents, and domestic violence.
Hello to you. Carriad, you'll be very pleased with this book. It's a grief book.
Do you know what? It is and it isn't.
Oh.
Lots of books use grief as a narrative device.
Okay.
Not all books go into grief.
Sure.
And I don't think this book is going into grief in the way that you'd expect, considering the character. So what's happened to our main lady, Dorothy, is her son dies of an allergic reaction to anaesthetic, but it's dealt with... As in, that's not really what the plot is about.
No. And you're meeting her not at a point of crisis.
No.
But in the years afterwards.
Yeah.
So in the continued grief.
Yeah.
This book, I should say, so the reason I think it's a grief book is I mentioned to someone that I just had a miscarriage and they sent me this book.
Oh, you are fucking joking.
Well.
God!
No, but the reason...
Oh my God!
All of us, you know, when we're going through personal tragedies and emotional events, press books on other people and go, yeah. You know what helped me?
You Are Not Alone by Carriad Lloyd.
You Are Not Alone by Carriad Lloyd covers every grief, A to Z.
It doesn't.
No matter how old the griever.
How old? I don't cover all griefs. I talk about all griefs.
Yes. Yes. It was right what they did.
Okay.
Because they were saying sometimes it just needs to be mentioned as part of a character's narrative.
Oh, yeah,
because
sure.
There's something that's really hugely common.
Yeah.
And it's all you want to think about actually when you're going through
it. Yes. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And this is a sad book that doesn't make you sad.
Agreed.
Yes.
Agreed. So they did do a nice thing. I'm surprised because for me, like I said, it's grief is the narrative background to a bigger narrative. So it's not a grief book, having read a lot of grief books, where it's like, it's really investigating what grief is. I think it's actually...
Oh, it's not doing that.
Yeah,
no.
That's what I mean. For me, a grief book has to be like, we're going into what is grief and how we feel it. Whereas this is a character that's grieving and then the story happens to her.
But the character would not behave this way, I sincerely believe.
Yes, yes.
Unless... she had been through the traumatic events she had been through. And the same with her husband. I think her husband's behaviour is grief related. And then later on, her friend Estelle, you have another person reacting from huge trauma.
Yeah, true. Yeah. I suppose it's like, you know, where in the recipe does it contain egg? It's like, I would put the egg lower. You would put the egg higher. But someone allergic to eggs would still be aware of the egg in this book.
I just want to say there's no egg in this book. If you are allergic, you can still
read it.
I think what I wanted to say at the beginning was that it's a sad book. We're going to talk about some very sad things.
Yes,
but this
definitely.
Book could be classed as a comedy in its flippancy or just
matter of fact.
Yeah, that's
what I mean. And it's also magical and fairy tale. And I mean, not that that doesn't mean it can't be a grief book, but it's not just about grief.
And as you said, you said it's not just not trying to investigate grief. It's trying to investigate what would you do if you started hearing voices through the radio and then Aquarius turns up.
And then a frogman turned up. Who actually,
Six foot seven.
He's pretty hot.
All right. Yeah. Let me describe him to you. Did it remind you of anyone? Muscular, vegetarian, sexually magnetic and excellent at housework. It me. Larry the Frogman is a revelation and their passionate affair takes them on a journey beyond their wildest dreams.
I want to say this book is light. It's a short novella, as what some people would say. What, how many pages is it? Like 100? 112?
All books are light to me because I'm so muscular.
Vegetarian.
And good at housework.
I had never heard of this book. It was published in 1982.
Well, the sad thing about the introduction to this book, actually, and I wanted to tell you how you felt about this, is that the author is described as obscure.
Well, she isn't. She's interesting. So she was obscure in her lifetime, apart from... So this is written in 1982. Didn't do particularly amazingly. In 1986, it was listed on by the British Book Marketing Council as one of the top 20 American novels of the post-World War II period.
Yeah, it was huge.
So no one had heard of it, and it went from that to being massive, but then that success kind of petered away again until 2017, when it was reissued. The film, Shape of Water, came out and is very... similar plotline, and lots of people said, as actually lots of different authors did, said, "You've nicked my work." She didn't. Rachel didn't. She said, "I don't care. It's about a sea monster." And Del Toro was taken to court by other people.
Who?
And he said, other writers said, "You've
have you read the Pisces?"
I have read the Pisces.
Yeah. And did she take him to court?
I don't think so.
Okay.
But he said it's based on like 1950s Creatures of the Black Lagoon, because it's a common trope sea monster thing.
You can't invent.
Exactly. So Rachel said, "I have no problem with this film. I'm very like happy." But it kind of brought this book back because everyone was like, is Mrs. Caliban. Okay. And then it got reissued in America and she got all these amazing reviews from the New Yorker and became very successful in America. And she died in 2019. So just before she died, she was aware that she'd had success, and her sister said, or it was maybe a friend, said, "She seemed to be not merely happy, but like Violetta in the final scene of her favourite opera, La Traviata, reborn."
Oh my gosh, that's so lovely.
Isn't that lovely? "I was astounded," she told the Globe. "The main thing to me is just being published. And really after that, I don't care."
Oh, Rachel.
She's a writer's writer, I think. So it's a really interesting book in that it's kind of had its moment twice.
Yeah.
But I don't know about you. This book is incredible to me.
Yeah, it's incredible.
I fucking loved it.
Yeah.
Grief book or not grief book, I can't believe more people... Like, this book should be everywhere. Why is this not an absolute classic?
It's really original.
It's incredibly original.
It's really special. There's social commentary. There's jokes.
It's funny. It's weird. It's magical. The plot?
Yeah.
It's got some absolute twists in there.
It's a page-turner. Yes. For such a tiny book, a lot happens.
It's like a poem. Yeah. Like, it's so... She's so deft with her text and in such...
And really good dialogue between characters.
Oh, amazing.
When she bumps into Estelle at the supermarket for the first time.
So good.
To set up a friendship and a friend character and how funny that character is so quickly, and then the marionettes keep coming forward with cheese.
Oh,
so they're all just brilliant scenes.
So brilliant.
Yeah.
And she's so... I was trying to describe it to someone else of like why it's good, and just saying to have the confidence to move plot along the way she does. Like, some books would spend 200 pages on that. "I'm going to the supermarket." She goes, she does it, she meets Frogman, they're having a relationship, they lie down on the bed, she says, "This is embarrassing." And he's like, then they get up and you're like, "We've had sex."
But even the decision, so she knows from the radio, and I know you listen to the radio. I don't know how you'd react if Radio 4 started sort of interfering with your life. But she
let me tell you about a pilot that went very wrong a long time ago.
Teetering on the edge of, she's hearing voices. So she's maybe
mentally very
well.
She starts to hear voices that she
But reassuring
realizes.
Voices, telling her it's all going to be okay.
Yes.
And then she hears a news report which she thinks could be, you know, her voices again about a big Aquarius sea monster who's murdered two captors, and escaped. And then later on, when she's cooking spaghetti bolognese for her husband and her work friend, the guy turns up in her kitchen. She hands him some celery. There's this split second. What do I do?
Well, she's reaching for a knife.
Yeah.
And she reaches celery. And this is the first time someone has sort of been kind to him. Mm. So he takes the celery and eats it because he's starving.
Mm.
So it's an act that she meant to be protective that he took as peaceful.
Mm.
And then he moves in with her. And her husband and her at this point, because so they have had the loss of their child and she's had a miscarriage. And since that point, they've been in single beds, not really communicating. He doesn't want to talk about any of the grief or the loss.
There's a really heartbreaking line. So
there's lots of it's really heartbreaking. Is this about the grief?
No matter how much you loved someone,
yes,
there was a limit to the amount of crying you could stand hearing.
Just before that sentence, she's crying about the dog dies.
Yeah, which is the third
one.
Yeah.
And she says, everything near her died, she had said, everything. It was a wonder the grass on the front lawn didn't turn around and sink back into the earth. She cried for days, weeks, and Fred began to explain less and even to talk less. No matter how much you love someone, there was a limit to the amount of crying you could stand hearing. Now that is incredible because it describes how it feels to be grieving and how it feels to watch someone grieve in like five sentences.
Yeah.
In that it's awful and it's awful.
Yeah.
And no one can bear it.
Yeah.
And nobody wins.
Yeah. I found it, even though it's dealt with so deftly, the separate beds, the lack of conversation about trying for other children, because how would a relationship flourish under the weight of so much sadness?
And she says to Estelle, we can't get divorced, we're too unhappy.
Yes, that's right. Happy people get divorced. People who expect happiness at the end of it or to be happier.
And it's like it's another grief, isn't it? If they divorced, they have to move out that house where the child lived.
Yeah.
And so they're frozen and that room has become the room of not Scotty's stuff, but... And which is also, weirdly, as she says, how she's able to have an affair and have Larry the Frogman live in her house without her husband knowing, because
he avoids that room because he thinks the toys are in there.
He's avoiding the room and he's having affairs, not working late. She never knows where he is. They don't talk. They holiday separately. So it's a very, very... Dorothy's so lonely. So, so lonely. I revoke my opinion. It is about grief. But do you know what? It's more... It feels like it captures so much more. So it's like she's not just focusing on that. Like if it was just, oh, my husband's having an affair and I have an affair with a frogman. But it's not just that, is it?
No.
So much more.
So the radio makes voices, the guy turns up, we meet Estelle, and all of a sudden I'm excited about the portrayal of a female friendship.
Oh, so Estelle's divorced,
but
has two kids.
She thinks Dorothy should get divorced. She complains about her kids. She makes very, very strong coffee.
Yep.
Dorothy,
she drinks
too much.
Yeah.
She's a bit judgmental about her drinking.
Yeah, yes, definitely.
But when it describes how they became friends, which was them, like she said, she sort of describes them in her kitchen, just all they could say was the bastards
while drinking
over and over again.
Later on she says, once or twice our lives were broken up so seriously that each of us was nearly ready to go under, really. So when something hits Estelle badly, it hits me too.
But then sort of the last third of the book, we find out slightly more of the narrative.
And I almost, normally on this show, we're like, of course there's spoilers, how can we talk about a book? But I'm like, if you want to read this
book... We don't need to spoil it.
But I would say, if you any of this piqued your interest, stop listening now and go and read it. Because one of the things I genuinely enjoyed so much was not knowing what was going to happen.
Yeah.
Because the plot does twist all over the place.
Yes.
From now on, I feel like we might have to occasionally.
Okay.
But we'll try not to.
No, we can do.
You're right.
You've said switch off.
Switch off.
I feel like this is bad business.
It is bad business, but this book is so good and it's so light. Switch off, then come back.
Yeah.
Don't go away forever.
God, you're expecting a lot of people.
Yeah. The book's that good. If you like books, and like me, you handed this to me and I thought, oh, what's this?
Yeah.
What's this?
I know, I saw.
Oh, you saw my face. Oh, Mrs. Caliban. Because I thought it might be a bit Shakespeare-y.
Oh, I see.
I was expecting something about that. And
I thought it was going to be on an island with a storm.
Yeah, and I don't... Tempest is not my favourite play. And obviously...
Well, it's no one's favourite.
It's no one's favourite. And I've had to do so much stuff about Caliban at university. So I thought we were going to be all like that. And then when Hot Larry turned up, the Frogman, I was wrong. I mean, I read it in two nights.
Okay, so we're doing spoilers now.
Yeah, now...
We've got rid of everyone.
Entering the world of spoilers.
When we find out later on...
Oh my God.
...that Estelle had a relationship with Dorothy's husband,
what
Fred.
What the fuck? Yeah. What the fuck? I couldn't believe it,
and
Sarah.
And not only that,
I couldn't believe
Dorothy
that.
To be the person who stopped them being happy together.
Which is why, at the beginning of the book, she's saying, why don't you get divorced?
Yeah.
Saying to Dorothy, you should get divorced. Why don't you do it? You're so miserable. Because she says at the end that line, you are the reason everyone's unhappy. Everyone does die around you.
Mm.
And this person who you think has been a friend, who you've been like so happy that she has, at least she's got Estelle.
She's got this ally.
She drops everything for Estelle. She nearly tells Estelle about Larry the Frogman. And you're thinking, maybe you should, maybe Estelle will help you. Like, you are in this mad situation. Estelle doesn't love her. Her husband doesn't love her.
And then her daughter's then having an affair with Fred.
Estelle's daughter.
Yeah.
Estelle's also,
daughter's a child.
Yes.
Yes.
Has moved on.
So Fred does not come out well of this.
No.
And he also hits her. Historically, we're told about a situation where...
Yes, where the dog
gets run over. She's desperately sad and her husband hits her to, in quotation marks, calm her down.
Yeah. It's a self-set 50s, right? I feel like I was like, did he ever actually say when it is? If I just missed that.
It doesn't feel like it's set in the 80s.
No, not at all.
Because it's radio, not television.
Yes. And also when the incident happens that Estelle's son is killed.
I know that is on the news, isn't it?
But it's on, everything's very blurry. Mm. Like she can't see the picture properly. So I was like, oh, we're dealing with a time where you literally don't know who's been killed in like this accident. Because you can't see their face properly. And then people have to, everyone keeps ringing around going, oh, it looks like Joey, it looks like him. And Estelle's not answering her door.
But the feminist commentary within this book, with moments like the way that hit is put in, or later on where Estelle's talking about why you can't trust doctors and take the drugs.
Oh, yes.
Because if you keep crying, they'll just put you into an asylum.
Because it's easier for them to handle you that way. And the way that Estelle says that was your problem, Dorothy. You took the drugs. They nearly took you away. And as if, and obviously her son has died because of this operation. It should have been a routine operation. He had a random allergic reaction. And it seems like it's been dealt with a shrug of the shoulders of like, oh, well, these things happen. Off you go. Your son is dead. So this mistrust of men and the medical world does have a very 50s vibe about it, doesn't it? Of like women not being believed in any shape or form.
And being very disenfranchised. Although she's not, she's able to have an affair with a frogman who then goes on to murder more.
Larry the Frogman's an amazing character.
Yeah,
amazing.
Really amazing.
He doesn't talk like a human. Like she's, the way his dialogue is, he genuinely...
Because his questions, the fact that he's sort of trying to learn that dance.
The Merce Cunningham. He keeps like doing the dance at her and she doesn't even know what it is till they see an advert.
He's like, what is this?
And he's basically trying to do contemporary dance.
Yeah. And then she says it's dancing. He goes, no, it's not. I've seen ballet. That's not dance.
Yeah. And I mean, I Googled Sir Merce Cunningham last night.
Oh, is that a real person?
Yes. Oh, he's a very famous choreographer.
Okay.
He's in a relationship with John Cage for a long time.
Ooh.
And they work together a lot. And he's contemporary. If you can imagine a man in tights
John Cage
and a vest.
Was obsessed with a dancer. Really beautiful.
Yeah, yeah.
My dad was talking about this the other day.
So Merce Cunningham's style is exactly what the spoof of contemporary dancer, like tights, vest, jerky, weird movements.
Oh, lovely.
Like with, and John Cage music. Yeah. Like exactly what you would find in a comedy sketch of contemporary dance.
Oh, I see. And that's why Larry was confused.
He was revolutionary and he changed the way that dance happened. Yeah. And he came from ballet background, but he like used the body in a completely different way. So he's a legend of his form. So it's fascinating that Larry is watching like a new form of language and communication that even and Dorothy struggles to say what it is because it's like, what is contemporary dance? Like it's not.
They have some really great conversations where he's asking her quite existentialist questions. And so she comes to even doubt where they're talking about why human beings mate the way they do.
Oh my God. Yeah.
She's having to describe, okay, well, women are looking for a man who are like this and is that true? Is that right?
Or when he says, this made me really laugh, she's talking about these people they don't like. The more Dorothy told him, the more he seemed fascinated. What struck him as most interesting was the fact that although Dorothy and Estelle talked about the Cranstons being friends, neither of them genuinely liked the couple.
Yeah.
Is this usual, he asked. After some thought, Dorothy said, she figured it probably was. I was like, yeah, friends that you don't like, a couple friends that you don't like.
You wouldn't believe that as a teenager.
No.
It's such an adult life thing.
Yes. Well, I still used to, my mum used to, I say to her like, oh, who was best man at your wedding? And she was like, well, I don't know where he is now. And I was like, but how can you, he was best man.
Yeah.
And she's like, oh, I don't know what happened to him. And as a kid, I was like, you made a bad call. Didn't choose a friend that you trusted. And now I'm like, oh, I see. People can be at your wedding and you don't know where they are anymore. Because at that point in time, they were part of your life and something happens and they're not. So yeah, I agree with you. It's a very...
But I think that's preferable to the opposite, which is people who hate their friends that they're trapped with.
Oh, yes. Yeah, my mum's like that. She's a mover on.
Yeah. It's healthy. So Larry, he describes where he comes from and he says everyone is the same.
Yes. And that bit where she says to him, they're like talking and getting confused. And she's like, he says, oh, I don't think I meant that. She's like, oh, you didn't mean people the same. He's like, no, I did. Everyone is the same. Because they all do the same thing. And this answer as well, she said, will they recognize you? And he was like, yeah.
Because I'm smell.
Like, I'm me.
Yeah.
And you know. And he has a bit of a fear, but he doesn't seem to have any existential crisis about what's happening to him. He just wants to get back home, which is the Gulf of Mexico, which is, she's planning to drive him down there. But, and we should talk, he's captured. So some scientific institute captures him, finds him, captures him. He's human-like, but he's not human. Mm. And they've been doing experiments on him.
So they've taught him how to speak. That's why he can communicate. They've played him music. They've fed him foods, but also had orgies with him.
Sexually abused him, it seems. But that's why he kills two of his, the scientists, and has his gate, which is when, we should have said, when Dorothy meets him. That's why he's on the run.
Yeah, we did say. Incident. We said that there was an announcement on the radio.
Yeah, I don't think we said why.
Yeah, I said he'd murdered two captors.
From the Institute.
From the Institute.
So when you hear it on the radio, you're like, oh, a scary sea monster is out and about. And then obviously we meet the person and we discover.
And he's instantly sympathetic.
Yes.
We are very sympathetic to Larry, even though the one thing we know, not only that he's killed two scientists, but one of them, like, he beheaded and gutted.
Yeah.
So it wasn't just...
Yeah, no, he wasn't just self-defence. He was angry with them for what they had done to him.
Yeah.
And I felt like she does... So amazingly, at the beginning, you're like, oh, Larry's a victim. And as it goes on, you're like, I'm a bit worried about her being with Larry. Like, there's loads of bits I felt wary of, like...
Oh, you were wary of Larry.
Yeah, towards the end, I was like, what's happening? Because he was saying such weird stuff. And she just implicitly was like, I trust you. He starts taking the car out by himself. And she's saying to him, we shouldn't go here. It's not safe. And he's like, I don't care.
Hmm.
And she says, like, oh, he's... She says that phrase, like, oh, he's... breached a new boundary now, like he's not worried about being safe anymore.
Yeah, and it felt like
it was like a dangerous boyfriend thing of like, I don't quite trust you, like,
oh really?
Yeah, I didn't trust him.
I did trust him. I think maybe it's because I like vegetarians. I loved his passion for lettuce and when he had an avocado for the first time, and he's like, that vegetable is the best vegetable I've had.
I'm allergic to avocados.
What?
Yes, did you not know?
Of course I didn't know. I knew about onions.
I can eat onions now.
What?
Oh no, big changes.
How?
I'm really allergic to avocados.
What? So did you find it triggering?
I found it
that he was eating 20 avocados a day.
The bag of them, I thought, oh, it makes me feel.
Did you?
Yeah, because I find them disgusting.
I want to make a salad.
Oh no!
Cover it in slimy green avocados.
When she was describing slicing the tops, I was like, oh god, disgusting.
Yeah.
Yeah, the vegetable stuff was good. Also, didn't you love when he was describing the makeup?
Oh, so his skin is dark green, and then he put on different shades of makeup.
Well, they tried to see about wearing a wig and getting sunglasses.
She sews two wigs together for his big old head.
And breaks sunglasses to make it bigger.
But she can't put the nose on them because she hasn't got a nose.
Yeah. And he says, I figured out the makeup. The secret is to wear a colour that's different from most of the people who live in the area.
Yeah.
Which obviously ends up causing him trouble. Because that's not the secret. He thinks that means people will leave you alone.
Yes. Rather than that you're already visible.
But that's inherently funny that she's trying to like, sew these wigs together and out of love for this frog man. Do you think
she feels so sorry for him?
Yeah. Do you think he's real?
Yeah.
Do you?
Do you not think he's real?
I'm not sure.
I guess the ending.
The ending made me feel less
that he's served a purpose.
Yeah,
and she can't conjure him again. He doesn't come back. So where is he?
Mm.
It leaves doubt in the reader's mind.
Yeah,
but he's very real to me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I thought he was very real until the end when you have that, spoiler, the car crash.
Yeah.
And he just disappears so quickly and is able to, it just runs out.
Yeah.
And no one sees him again. That I suddenly was like, is this your grief? Is this what you needed? Did you manifest what the love and care that you needed? Because somewhere in you, you knew your best friend was sleeping with your husband.
One of the things that's really wonderful about him is how much he enjoys helping her with housework.
Oh,
so if you were going to have an imaginary friend,
exactly,
wouldn't it be someone who like was into hoovering and kept you company in those drudgery tasks that you are expected to do?
He says he loves it because you use your fingers so much, but your body is still. So when he's like cleaning her silver and dusting, it's a really great thing. He really enjoys it. And he's just wearing an apron around the house with her.
He doesn't have society's expectations of gender roles.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But that's what I mean. He becomes this. He's vegetarian. He's muscly. Yes. He's healthy.
He's good at sex.
He's very good at sex.
Yeah.
But in a very
they have sex loads of times the first sort of night. And she's like, do your creatures, do you always have this much sex? And he's like, yeah, do you not? Is this normal?
And she's like, well, no. It depends on the person and how they feel about it. It's like, oh, no, it doesn't depend on how you feel about it. But what I love is it doesn't really matter if he's real. And also he is and he isn't. That's why I think she's such a good writer. Because it's like, he's a really real character. He doesn't come across as a figment of imagination. It was only towards the end when I was like, oh, actually, have you been very unhappy? Because she hears the voices on the radio before he turns up. So you already know she's not in a good place.
There's a very careful distinction that the radio voices that are in her head are soft and gentle.
Yes.
And that news thing is a very different tone.
Yes.
So we do know that news is true.
Yeah, the news is true.
But it could be that, that monster's somewhere else.
Well, and also that amazing bit when she says to Estelle, so Larry's frogman ends up killing Estelle's son. And she says to Estelle, you know, oh gosh, he's still out there. And Estelle is like, oh, don't be stupid.
There's no monster.
It's no monster. Yeah. Some kids. And you think.
Yeah. It was a gang, yeah.
And you think that does make more sense, Estelle.
Yeah.
Why? And she says, like, why, what she said, what, so you, like this huge, strong monster beat them all off. And you're like, not beat them all off. It's a huge, strong monster.
Several times it is stressed, people see what they want to see.
Yes.
People see things in Times Square. Once they see them in an area, everyone will start seeing him.
Yeah.
And she has to explain that to Larry when he's saying, they keep saying on the news, I've been in these places and I know I haven't been there. Yeah.
Maybe that's mad to think of Frogman, that Joey has been running around with bad kids and they do get into stealing stuff.
So now I'm open to this. So if he's there because she needs him, so her mind has conjured him a survival, then that's why he starts doing independent things like taking the car out by himself. That's the beginning of him having freedom, the beginning of him leaving.
Yeah. She doesn't need him anymore. Because it's like, as Estelle says, you don't know what desire is.
But she does now.
But she does.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
I read an interview with Rachel.
Did you?
Ingalls,
okay, great.
Saying, initially when... people wanted to make a film of it in the 80s, she was very resistant because she was like, you'd have to make a decision whether he's real or not. And then when the, obviously many years later when she'd been popular and then lost it and then discovered, she said she didn't care. She was like, a film is a separate thing to a book and it just has to be a good film. And if they want to make that choice, they make that choice. But initially she said...
But also she's probably seen by then Fight Club. Ron, you can... two things could be true at the same time. Someone can be both utterly real to the viewer but not really there.
Oh my God. Rachel, you're all right. Oh, you know what? I've just seen Fight Club and it's changed a lot of stuff. Feeling really different. This is what I thought was an interesting quote from her. She never sought the limelight. It rarely found her. She said, I'm really no good at meeting lots of strangers and I'd resent being set up as the new arrival in the zoo. And I thought, she's Frogman. Like, that's the thing. She didn't, that feeling of like everybody clamoring for you or wanting a piece of you and everyone being like, what's, there's something strange and weird, but how are you? What, like, how have you existed?
Yeah.
So I was like, oh, that's interesting. Is Frogman her grief or part of her or part of all of us or does it matter? Like, it's a better story that he's real. Like, that makes the story way more interesting.
It makes it a different world.
Yes.
You want the world to coexist.
Yeah.
You want it to be that he is literally... He's so matter of fact. There's something I thought was so beautiful about accepting things as they are. So when she's describing women wanting men who seem, you know, like they could get someone better or stronger, and he's saying, well, surely we all just want what we actually have. And this is actually, I think, in response to her describing unhappiness. And he says, you've got all this. He spread his arms out away from the car to take in the earth and sky all around and said, "You've got all this and you live here. It's your home." And that's, so she's just said to him, like, "Oh, you're all I've got," as in, "I've got nothing." He's like, "You've got everything."
And that's what I mean about, like, he's real and he's not real, because she's at that point in grief where she's so alone and so isolated with all her feelings, and at a time when she's not having therapy, her husband's not talking to her about
it. Also letting go of the fact that she's not probably not going to have another child now, because if that was the only solution, the only thing she could think that would rescue her life and her marriage.
Well, also it's interesting, then the husband keeps saying, doesn't he, as well, like, there's a bit where it seems like the husband's decided,
yes,
actually, I'm going to make an effort with this
She's
marriage.
Complained a lot about the fact the separate beds, and that he's just made this decision that they don't have a sexual relationship. We're told they don't have sex, haven't had sex for 2 years. And there's a tide change based on Scrabble. Scrabble can be very erotic. They play 4 rounds of Scrabble.
And she beats him every time, so we know she's much cleverer. Yeah. And she says, "Why do we stop playing this?" He says, "Because you always win."
Yeah.
And you're like, okay, he can't deal with her and all of her brilliance.
Mm-hmm.
And then she keeps using this phrase of, "He thinks we could go back to where it was."
Mm.
And again, that's very, very grief thing, in that you think you can go back to pre the death of their child. And she, at this point, has accepted.
You think that's what healing is, returning back to a place before the thing.
And
happened.
At this point in the novel, she's like, we can't go back. Which, at the start of the novel, that's all she wants, is Fred to come back to her, to have her life, to have everything come back as normal. And Larry has showed her, You can't come back from having sex with a 6'7" frog man. You can't go, Fred. I constantly beat at Scrabble, who wears a crap tie and thinks he's funny. Yeah, you'll do. Just another brilliant piece of writing when she says, "Oh, she's talking about the ocean, and him being down in the ocean, worrying about him." But she says, "The ocean was a world, and a world is not art." Dorothy thought about the living things that moved in that world, large, ruthless and hungry, like us up here.
Mm.
So simply done.
Really simply done.
Yeah.
Dorothy's not a philosopher. She's a housewife. Yeah.
I like that as well, that she often can't answer his questions.
Yes.
She struggles with this alien being.
And doubts her answers. Could we talk about the Pisces quickly?
Yeah.
Because I did think this would be, they'd be quite a good sort of double if you wanted. This book, the sex is very matter of fact.
Yes.
We know that, you know.
It's not even really described. You just know it's good.
Whereas with the Pisces, that's the sex stuff is sort of quite a lot of it, the drive of the story.
Yeah.
And is really described.
A creature comes out of.
A merman. Would you say?
A lonely woman in California starts having very deep sex with a merman.
Who's got a very sort of weird nubbin kind of penis.
Yeah, I can't remember the details.
Why can't you? The reason I remember it so much is because Dolly Alderton had read it. And I'd read it and we were talking about it and Steen hadn't read it and she sent it to him and he never reads and he was really shocked.
It's quite graphic.
I you know when you read, you know, just reading for yourself, I didn't quite take in the graphicness until Steen kept coming and going, "He's got a nubbin."
It's odd. Yeah. He's very beautiful and the sex is not like anything she's ever had.
Mm.
And the sex in the Pisces, I can't remember who it's by.
Melissa Broder,
thank you. It's intricate to the plot. Like, it's part of that. It's about a sexual awakening. Whereas for Mrs. Caliban, again, perhaps because of when it's written.
Also, I guess the difference is the Pisces, the merman, is free, living in the sea, swims off. Whereas Larry's trapped in
He didn't want to be here.
Yeah.
He didn't want to learn this language. He didn't want to come out of the sea. Whereas the merman sees her and is like, hello. And then they agree to sort of have sex.
Yes.
Yeah, but let's talk about the Pisces.
No, we have.
All right.
That was it.
I prefer this to the Pisces, definitely. Although I do think it's a more dated, more classical take on that story, whereas I think Pisces is very, like, a very modern take on that.
But in both of them, I think I read the creature as real. That's maybe that what I find as a double.
I want Larry to be real. And I do think,
serve something, providing a heterosexual male in a situation where the female character has no use for human men anymore.
Yes.
Maybe that's what it is. Yeah,
I like that.
Because Dorothy couldn't have just met a man. Like, it couldn't have been Mr. Mendoza that she was having this
process
with.
And there's also this relationship with men. She talks a lot about being a teenager and what she thought teenage, what she thought romance would be like, what she like, and her and her friend would follow like college couples, lovers yeah. together and see them walking off and the certain, you know, cliff points they'd drive out to. And she's been waiting her whole life for this type of romance. And now she's got it because Fred has not lived up to it. And this bit really broke my heart. They went swimming together and made love on the beach. That's the level of sexual contact you're getting in Mrs. Yes, Caliban. Yeah. Thank you very much. That's what I'm after. Dorothy still felt like a teenager. At the time when her hope and youth and adventurousness had left her, she had believed herself cheated of those early years when nothing had happened to her, although it might have. Later still, she realised if she had made an effort, she herself could have made things happen. Mm. I found that really heartbreaking yeah. as a cautious teenager. I was like, yeah. oh, God. But now it didn't matter. Here she was. So she's getting the teenage man of her dreams.
Yes. And she's very, very happy.
Yeah.
Right from the beginning.
Yeah.
That glow of...
Yeah, and people say, you look yes. so well, you're yeah. looking really good, because she's in love.
Yeah.
And that's why love. Also you get the feeling that's why Fred decides, oh, maybe yes. we could have a marriage
she
again.
She seems more attractive again.
Because she's having an affair, technically, which, you know...
And Estelle assumes she's met someone as
yes,
well.
Yes, which is why Estelle gets obviously excited, because they're trying to break up this marriage the whole time. It's very Renaissance tragedy, like her ending, yes, like her way yeah. of getting this character out, which I liked and I think works in a shorter book, in a novella. Mm. Like, I think what you're expecting, or maybe in a modern novel, is like Larry disappears and then she figures out her life, but actually yeah. everyone around her dies.
Yeah. And she's told you that's what happens to her.
Yeah.
And you don't believe her. You think that's a grieving person.
Yeah, I read that. It's like, oh, she's just in grief and that's not true. And actually Fred dies. Kids die.
Estelle's children die. Yeah, yeah.
It's just her and Estelle left. Yes. And she replicates, Estelle becomes her.
Mm.
Estelle becomes, loses both of her children, and so that she has lost both of her children and they both lose Fred. So they're in, the only person who understands yeah. her now is Estelle, and Estelle obviously by this point wants nothing to do with her. But that's why I mean, it's so interesting, because you're sort of on her side. But by the end I was like, oh, actually, Dorothy.
Like, well, that's the thing about the judgment calls, is like Fred dies and we sort of feel like he deserves it.
Mm. Well, he's kind of running her off the road.
Yeah, he's chasing her because he's
seen Larry the Frogman yes. in the car with her and yes. everyone's looking for this scary sea monster. But why yeah. is his reaction even then?
But if Larry doesn't actually exist, then he just knows that he's caught. Yeah. He knows that she's seen him.
Have sex with a young girl.
Yeah.
Yeah, Estelle's daughter.
Enthusiastically or however, vigorously oh, yeah. against a bench. Yeah. Really
in the
gross.
Tie that she had tied earlier mm. for him. Oh, that bit was so sad.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess it, she really does cover the characters are so
what
flawed.
I mean about that's that same surfaceness of like, so sad events. We don't cry for Fred. We don't cry for Estelle's children. We don't cry for Estelle. All of those huge things are plot.
Yeah.
They don't feel, we don't emote.
That's kind of the fairy tale-ness of it, isn't it? Because it is, and again, I read a thing that she's obsessed with the Brothers Grimm fairy tales. And I was like, you can feel it with that ending of like horrific people just die. That's the end.
Yeah. And there's a moralism to it. So the son was part of a gang attacking the sea monster. So the sea monster killed them.
And Larry keeps saying that to her, doesn't it? It's like, but why do you care you didn't care about the science people.
Oh yeah. He actually asks, why is it different if you know someone?
Yeah.
Why is it more sad if you know them?
Yeah. Cause I killed the science guys and you weren't bothered, but then I killed your friend's son and now you're bothered. She's like, well, I knew him. She's like, yeah, but there were still people.
Yeah.
I like the way she brings up these arguments without offering any explanation.
Yeah, it's just social commentary.
Yeah.
We empathise with some people and not others.
And Dorothy is left as, speak to us as we are, as humans, of like, well, I also couldn't answer Larry in that situation. It's like, but we do. And so, yeah, it doesn't, yeah, I don't think it matters if he exists or not. I think it's just sort of, at the end, I was like, is he real? Because I could really imagine, like, she's describing, oh, Fred's trying to run me off the road because he's seen Larry, and you're like, I can imagine you on your own screaming at him, I've seen you have sex with Sandra, and that's what he's trying to run off the road. And Sandra is in the car trying to grab the wheel, which I mean, I did feel empathy for Estelle. Did you? Or like the kid, I felt it was horrible. Like, what a horrible pile up at the end.
Oh, for Estelle, so losing her children.
But just the whole like Renaissance, like everybody's dead by the end of it.
Yeah. Oh, I definitely did. But I guess that the author's decision to have Estelle not emote.
Yes, I see. Oh, yeah.
Having,
she's sort
I've
of,
not
like,
cried
numb,
yet.
Yeah.
I'm going to be in control of this. She talks, I mean, which I found quite extreme, but she talks about like getting over her son's death just after her son's died.
Who, Estelle?
Yeah.
As, like, I read that as shock.
Shock.
Yeah, yes, yeah. Okay. She's in total shock. And I think Dorothy's reading it as shock as well. Mm. Like, there's nothing you can do.
Yeah.
Like, it's just, you can see it hasn't hit her yet at all. And they're having to have this very public funeral because a sea monster killed them. So yeah. The press are all involved. And
yeah, it's going to be on TV.
It's going to be on television. And some of the other families have sold the story. And yeah, it's amazing that she can keep that much madness under control, that you completely believe it. You're not like, oh my God, hang on, what? You're like, yeah, there's a reality to this folk tale. Yeah, I mean, it's such a good book.
It is a good book,
it's
isn't it?
It's a fucking great book.
But for me, it's a proper weirdo book.
Yes.
Because
she is a weirdo, definitely. And at the end, she just keeps going back to the beach waiting for him.
And he's a weirdo. It's about a weirdo arriving. The human emotions involved are very everyday and feel very representative, very true. But as you say, like within a story which is impossible.
Yes, completely impossible. And it does have that Shakespearean feel, doesn't it? Even though I didn't want it to.
What, in what way?
Well, like the magicalness of it, like the Tempest. That there's a magical land.
Okay, like the donkey.
The donkey?
Midsummer Night's Dream.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I was like, I've forgotten that bit in the Tempest. Where's the donkey? Yeah, that Shakespearean feel of like there's humans and there's reality and there's all this moralising and this great philosophising about how we are as people. And there's a storm that brings other people and like these two people and some twins. I'm mashing all the stories together. And that's fine. And both of those coexist because actually what I'm telling you is about human nature.
Mm.
And I'm telling you in a magical folktale way. But I like that it's...
Do you know, did she say in an interview that's why she called her Mrs. Caliban?
She's a massive Shakespeare fan.
Really?
Huge, yes. That's why she lived in England.
Well, like a groupie?
She was from America, born in Boston. And she went to Germany for a while and... like German, and then in the summer of 1964 she came to England, and that's when I know this as well because my mother-in-law was very involved with this. It was the quadricentennial productions, so it was the
400 years
at Stratford-upon-Avon, and the RSC did like a huge thing, and it's like very famous. I can't remember any of the names, but like those actors, I want to say Laurence Olivier, let's double check that, but it's
so,
like,
so this is 64,
and she stayed and watched all of them, and it was like a huge thing. My mother-in-law also watched all of it, and it like changed a lot of people's world, that like they did every single play, they did all the histories together, you could watch the whole thing, and it was like, oh wow, this text was born for people. And the next year she moved here permanently, and she was very into Euripides and Shakespeare and the magicalness of that world. But
so it was an intentional,
I think it's a reference, but it doesn't feel What I like is it's not going, oh, you need to have read The Tempest for your book. Because I hate that when you're like, oh, it's not, just write a book that's good.
Mm.
And I feel like you get the reference, but it doesn't affect anything else. And also it's like, well, it could mean so many things.
Those are geniuses, weren't they?
Well, I think she is a genius.
Yeah.
And she's written loads of other books that were all kind of short novellas. And I started reading about them. They all sound as mad and brilliant as this, of like frogs coming out of baths and... Yeah, magical stuff happening and people sort of, but still living in this world while magical things happening.
Love it.
I'd say a big thumbs up for the Weirdos Book Club.
Yeah. I feel bad for all the other books we haven't given anything.
Five weirdos out of five.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah, really fantastic. Oh, I hope that people do go and find her.
Yeah, and I also would recommend this new Faber Editions with a lovely new introduction as well.
Have you been sponsored by Faber?
No, you are, but I liked the picture because of the picture and all the other 80s book is like a creepy green.
Yeah, I liked that one.
Oh, I was like, I'd be scared to pick that up.
I did like that one. I had to get another copy and I saw it and it was 40 quid though.
Oh, God.
I like the weird one.
I like this one with a nice picture of a floaty green person, a floaty pink person. It made me less scared of Frogman. Do we have a quote to end on?
There was a bit about speciesism and about how, she explains to him that some people don't think women have souls.
Yeah.
Historically.
That was bad.
Yeah.
I like that they watch the Muppets and she says, she calls them puppets. The puppet she liked best was the wild one with all the teeth, animal. His favourite was the saxophone player. That's all you need to know about this camera. Thank you for reading with us.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Weirdos Book Club.
Next week's book guest is Things I Don't Want to Know by Deborah Levy.
But things you do want to know are that Sarah's novel Weirdo and my book You Are Not Alone are both available now. And our next live show is on Thursday the 25th of January at Boyle's, Tottenham Court Road. Tickets are available now.
Thank you for reading with us.
We like reading with you.
You. deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hi, I'm Lucy Beaumont.
And guess what? I'm Sam Campbell.
If you've enjoyed this podcast, you might enjoy our podcast. It's called Lucy and Sam's Perfect Brains.
We have a podcast and it might be, I probably don't want to sound, like I'm bragging, but it's dynamite. It is electric. It's high voltage. And please, we really need you to listen. You don't understand how much we need this.
Is it on all the platforms?
Oh, it absolutely is. But this one's out now. Lucy and Sam's Perfect Brains.